5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, good evening. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, having a good time tonight in the Quicken Loan Studios. And so much of our coverage has focused on the NBA playoffs, Commissioner Adam Silver's response to Clippers owner Donald Sterling, the scandal. So right now, we're going to focus our attention and relive some wonderful memories from one of the most revered and respected athletes and citizens of his time. Tonight, we will highlight the making of a pitcher, Nolan Ryan. It's such a pleasure to welcome in Rob Goldman, who just released a comprehensive biography on Nolan Ryan. It's wonderful to have you with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
Thanks, Alyssa. It's great to be on board. Appreciate it.
Congratulations. It is certainly a definitive biography, and there is no doubt that Nolan Ryan is certainly one of baseball's all-time greatest pitchers, executives, and I would say also ambassadors. He's had such a rich and illustrious career. But before we kind of listen and have you take us through his journey in baseball, there's just curiosity on my part. I would love for you to share with all of our listeners across the country tonight how you first met Nolan and Ruth, because it goes way back to the 70s and being a bat boy for the Angels.
Yeah, I was one of those kids who, lived and breathed baseball as a youngster. You know, I collected the cards. I played Little League and Pony League in high school, and I was obsessed. And we had some interesting ties with the California Angels. My grandma knew the wife of Fred Haney, the former general manager, and I had some connections to the UCLA baseball team with Bobby Winkles, who was a coach. And I used to hang around, get autographs after the game, and I got to know people. And as luck turned out, I was hired as a substitute bat boy in 1973, and that was my first time I really met Nolan. I met him before getting his autograph, but that was the first time I met him more as an equal. And we hit it off right away. He liked country music. I was probably the only kid in the West Side who liked country music.
Hey, you're my kind of guy. I love country music. Okay.
Back then, it wasn't cool to like the country. Now it's pretty mainstream. But, you know, he liked horses. He liked animals. Plus, he's just a real sincere, caring person. And he always had an eye for the underdog. And I think he looked out for the bat boys and me in particular. And we kind of bonded that spring. And in 74, they hired me full-time. And, you know, I was kind of the guy, his go-to guy, you know, to help him out. You know, he had a lot of more pressure on the other players because he had so much attention on him. And we kind of bonded. And when you bond with Nolan, you bond with Ruth, you bond with the family because they go together. So we started in 73, 74, and I was bat boy for a few years, did 77, 78, and then I went to college, and I kept coming back during the summers, and he was around, and then he kept getting traded and moved along for about 20 years, and I was always there to meet him in town, and he'd go get a hamburger or something, and I'd take him back and forth to the game. So we had a real unique friendship, and of course that extended to his ranches and his homes. He'd take me out there, and we'd ride horses and work on the ranch. So it was just an organic, natural thing, and I never really thought of him as a important baseball figure because he was so down to earth. He just kind of took me in, and I respected that. His need for privacy, and here we are. We have a book.
That's right. Rob Goldman is with us at Yahoo Sports Radio. The Big E Sports Show has just released the definitive biography on Nolan Ryan, The Making of a Pitcher. I have to assume this is so thrilling for you personally to be able to share not only Nolan, but Ruth's story. And that's one of the things, that there were so many personal stories that you do share in the book, that it wasn't just focused on Nolan. I mean, Ruth really was that wind beneath his wings.
Well, yeah, it, understand Nolan and his success and his personality, you have to look at the complete picture, and that picture is not complete without Ruth Ryan. She was the driver, in a sense. You know, she guarded the home fires, and when things were tough early on, when he was a New York Met, you know, things weren't. It wasn't a Nolan Ryan we knew. He was a struggling, trying to stay out of the bullpen. He just couldn't crack it in New York, and there was several times where he thought about quitting. And Ruth was always there. Well, let's give it another year. Let's give it another shot. And back in 1972, he came over to the Angels, and there was a strike that season, and he was down to his last dollar. And you know, he said, "Look, I can't hang out here. I got to go home and work." And Ruth said, "Well, let's stick it out another week or two." And he borrowed money off his tax returns, and you know, they were able to stay because the strike ended. But you know, like you said, there was an uncommon devotion between the two. That's not just amongst baseball players and wise, because it's a very tough life, but just any I've never known anyone, a couple, that devoted to each other. And I think with their small town roots and the way they were brought up, but it's pretty unique. When he was a player, he called her 5-6 times a day to see how things were going, and there was no carousing. It was he took her serious, and she took him serious. And without Ruth Ryan, there would have been no Nolan Ryan as we know today.
Of course, in the book, the foreword is written by their son, Reed Ryan. We're going to hit on that here momentarily. But I have to ask you personally, was this difficult to write an objective book, being a lifelong friend, as you've just shared? I mean, there's a challenge there to set the right tone.
You hit it on the head, Alyssa. You know, that was really, if I had any hesitancy at all, that was like, well, okay, we agreed to do this book, now what? Well, you can't just have a 300-page love letter. You have to be objective, but also you got to, you know, put your personal side in it too. So there was a balancing act, you know. So basically what I did, I went out and interviewed over 100 people, and that kind of buffered me between the personal, too much personal side. And so it's really a story told by his peers, his friends, his family, as well as me, as well as Nolan. And you're right, boy, you know, every word you write, well, he's a friend. Do I want to say that? How do I present that? Fortunately, there's no dirt on Nolan. He's a clean liver, and he's a sincere guy, so there was none of that to worry about. But still, you know, do you want to write this? Do you want to write that? How do you frame that? And that was definitely a challenge, and hopefully we pulled it off. So far, I got thumbs up.
I understand it took 5 years interviewing those for these eyewitness accounts that you were talking about, who coached, who trained, and who Nolan Ryan played with.
Yeah, the process began at his birthday in 2007, so maybe it was a little bit more than five. And, you know, it was just trying to get the deal and then, you know, then start the journey. You know, Ruth gave me a list of, you know, 11 phone numbers and family members to start with, and I just ran from there. You know, I talked to, like I said, over 100 people. There's George Brett, there's Pete Rose, there's Randy Johnson, there's Reggie Jackson, all the way down to the clubhouse help and the trainers. So there's a wide gamut of personalities to cover this thing.
Okay, Rob, so being a close family friend, was there anything that you learned that you did not know about Nolan Ryan that kind of surprised you, perhaps through the process?
I learned that he was really stubborn. That's Ruth said, yeah.
Ruth would probably say that, huh?
They all said he's got a stubborn side. And I've seen it once or twice, but I guess if that was his vice, it's stubborn. But I think as a competitor to last 27 years and break all these records, you have to have a stubborn streak in you. Sometimes it overflowed in his personal life, but not much. And I think maybe that was an asset in some sense in the baseball world. As far as professionally, I didn't realize when I talked to guys like Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter and the pictures, the modern pictures, Derek Hollins, the Matt Harrisons on the Rangers now, how much effect he had on Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens. His work ethic, he was the first guy to get in the weight room and start these mammoth workouts, and it carried on to the next generation. You know, through Roger Clemens and Randy Johnson, they passed it on. So these intense workouts you have now that everyone has, they emanated from Nolan. He was the first guy into the weight room, first pitcher to really work hard with weights. So there's a modern link all the way to Mo Rivera that Nolan started back in the 70s, and that's what really impressed me, because his legacy is still going on actively as we speak.
Rob, you stay with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break. We're up against the clock, and we will be right back talking much more about the illustrious career of Nolan Ryan. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, taking you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. We love hearing from you online. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports, as we're having a wonderful conversation with author Rob Goldman, who has released the book on Nolan Ryan, The Making of a Pitcher. And before we went to commercial break, we were talking about the influence that Nolan Ryan has had on so many of the biggest names in baseball, Yu Darvish, Derek Jeter, you know, what these players had to say about him and the influence in terms of the work ethic. Take us back to who influenced Nolan the most in terms of his work ethic, because I understand it was his parents, and they went through some very hard times in the Depression.
Yeah, if you want to understand Nolan's work ethic, you have to study his lineage. He came out of, his ancestors came out of, originally out of Georgia. They were founding fathers, or they found the Continental Congress down in Georgia. Migrated to, Louisiana, Mississippi, and they were farmers, soldiers, and then eventually church builders. But they always had this work ethic about them. And fast forward to the 20th century, Nolan's grandfather was a rancher in Central Texas, but his parents, particularly his dad, they had six kids, and his parents were Depression-era, family. And he had to hold down two jobs to get these kids through college. And he was a worker for Scammon Oil, and he also had delivered a paper route for the Houston Post. And so work was survival for the Ryans, and work was a privilege, as Reed Ryan would say. When the sun came up, they felt fortunate to go to work because of this Depression-era background. So Nolan got the work ethic early on. Through high school and even a couple of years before that, he was out with his dad at 3 or 4 in the morning at the corner of at Corner Street in Alvin, folding and delivering the papers when everybody else was asleep. And then he'd go to school, and then he'd play basketball and baseball. So he had this rare energy, an ethic, and plus he was a workhorse. So it started early on. What Nolan did, he brought that work ethic into the major leagues. Not at first, when he was with the Mets, Whitey Herzog, his original player of personnel, he said, he was lazy as a dog. He just didn't understand that you had to apply the same elements of work into baseball as you did to other things. But once he caught on to that, nobody worked harder than he did. And as he moved on, he kept looking for new ways to improve himself. It was California. He discovered the weight room for the first time. Just stumble upon it and sneak in there because players weren't allowed to use it. Then he found out about stretching, so he started doing that. Then when he gets to Houston, he meets Dr. Coleman, and they start experimenting with Nautilus and diet and new stretches. And by the time he gets to Houston, Texas, with Tom House, he's got all these cutting edge protocols from Japan, and next thing you know, Nolan is throwing footballs and doing awkward stretches. But he always had a curiosity about him based on work and how I can improve myself. He said, "I want to be the best conditioned player on the field, and I can't control everything, but I can control my condition." And this was all done without steroids. This was all done with proper diet and experimenting with different protocols. But the work ethic is central. It's still going on today.
And as I understand in the book, you shared that Nolan had talked to you about that perseverance is the result of a lifetime of good habits. I mean, that is remarkable to think. From ages 8 to 18, he would get up at 3 a.m. To 6 and do that paper route and get ready for that every single day. What are some of the other qualities that you appreciate and admire about Nolan Ryan the most? You've talked, obviously, about his work ethic and his ability to persevere.
Yeah, the other ones that stand out, and I try to interweave these within, like examples through stories, is his humility, his curiosity, his family, his love of family, sincerity, and also humor. And I think of all those, the ones that stand out to me was his sincerity and his humility. The humility would let other people into his life. Even when he was a superstar, he'd be open to new ideas, and that's why he allowed, he's always gravitated to the smartest person in the clubhouse, whether it was a Tom House or a Gene Coleman. And he also had this code where, I don't judge people on how much you make or what you do. I judge you on your character. Therefore, when with the angels, you know, he gave as much attention to me as he would the owner Giantri because he enjoyed our friendship. And those are some of the qualities, I think, that enabled him to be as good as he could be. Because when you're humble and you have humility and you have empathy, you allow other people in your life and you're not just set in your ways. And I think that's a huge factor in his successes.
Rob Goldman is with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're talking about his book, Nolan Ryan, The Making of a Pitcher. What did his son, Reed Ryan, share in the foreword?
Well, Reed, you know, I've known Reed since he was born in 71, and I first met Nolan in 73. So I knew Reed when he was just a
little guy, yeah.
And he's the same Reed he was as a toddler as he is now, just this totally optimistic go-getter. He's got the best qualities of Ruth and Nolan, and it's no surprise why he's such a successful baseball executive. But, you know, I asked Reed, you know, some of the ideas that you wanted to share with the forward, and he says, you know, let people know that, you know, basically, you know, how much his mom meant to Nolan, and how much, you know, how much he'd like to share his family within his job, in the sense that, you know, he said, you know, make sure people know that this is a, later on especially, it was not a Nolan Ryan project, it was a family project. Family is another core factor with Nolan, and Reed wanted me to make sure that I get that across, and I hope we did.
Just a few more minutes of Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, talking to Rob Goldman. And as you reflect over Nolan Ryan's career, we've only got about 60 seconds. You look at his stats. I mean, they're so incredible. Which one stands out the most to you from all of his years in baseball?
Well, besides the 27 years, which is longer than anybody ever played, I think his 204 batting average, players, hitters against him, 3.19 ERA, 9.5 strikeouts a game, and only 6.55 hits. No hitters, he never tried to get no hitters, but I think those lifetime stats and the fact that he struck out 383 people in one season, I think that's what stands out to me most on the baseball field.
Well, Rob, you certainly provide some wonderful perspective on his amazing, as I said earlier, his illustrious career, Nolan Ryan, The Making of a Pitcher. We want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of that, and we look forward to catching up with you real soon. Let us know when you're in Houston, okay?
Yeah, we'll do that. I appreciate you having me on, Alyssa. It was fun.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. We'll be posting this book on there, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and we are continuing to hit on a variety of subjects this weekend. And now let's turn our attention to some college football. We're going to recap and provide some analysis and insight on the Ohio State Buckeyes, talk some Big Ten football. And, of course, last week on our show with Husker great Jason Peter, we were talking about the Big Ten television schedule and that the Buckeyes, what they've penciled in four network night games. Urban Meyer, a huge fan of that, in favor of that. So we've invited on tonight in the Quicken Loan Studios, Bill Rubinowitz. He is a sports writer at the Columbus Dispatch. We're looking forward to talking some Buckeye football. Welcome aboard, Bill. It's been way too long.
Yes, it's nice to be with you, Lisa.
Before we start discussing the upcoming season and perhaps some of the things that we learned from spring practice and the spring game, let's step back and let's think back on how the season unfolded in 2013, because, the Buckeyes, they were one victory away from playing in that BCS National Championship against Florida State. What was the biggest concern that they need to address as they usher in a brand-new season in 2014?
Well, the big concern last year was the pass defense, which really struggled, especially late in the year. Honestly, if they'd had to go against that Florida State offense in the championship game, it might have gotten ugly. So it was exposed against Michigan. They survived it. It was exposed again against Michigan State. They did not survive it in the Big Ten championship game. That was really the missing piece to the puzzle last year. This year, they've tried to address that by hiring Chris Ash, who worked under Brett Bielema at Wisconsin and Arkansas. They really instituted a much more aggressive pass defense scheme. Urban Meyer said, "Well, if we get beat on a big play, we get beat. But I just don't like this bend but don't break philosophy. We're gonna attack." So that's one area of concentration during the spring. The other is they have to replace basically the entire offensive line. They only have one starter back, Taylor Decker, who moved from right tackle to left tackle. that's a big concern still. They have a lot of faith in their offensive line coach, Ed Warner, but you're still talking about having a bunch of very young, inexperienced guys up front, and that's going to be a major concern.
Absolutely, because that offensive line, what, they lost four seniors.
Yeah, four seniors, led by Jack Muhort, who will be a pretty high draft pick next week. So that's a big area of concern.
And, of course, we definitely want to get an update on Braxton Miller. He's still recovering from the minor shoulder surgery. Who are the backups, and how did they finish in the spring game?
Well, Braxton Miller had surgery before spring practice, so he did not do anything at spring practice other than stand back and kind of analyze plays. He was a glorified videographer. So it was one of the more interesting battles at camp was who would emerge as his backup, because Kenny Guyton has graduated. Kenny Guyton was invaluable in so many ways to the Buckeyes. And so the guys that are competing are Cardale Jones and J.T. Barrett. J.T. Barrett was first quarterback that Urban Meyer recruited. Tom Herman recruited, the offensive coordinator out of Texas. Cardale Jones, a guy from Cleveland who was most known infamously for that tweet he sent out a couple years ago saying, you know, basically, why are we in class? The irony is that he was a scholar athlete. That clearly was just kind of a strange thing. He said, well, it was a stupid thing to do as a freshman. And, you know, so he certainly regrets doing that. At this point, Cardale Jones is the guy who emerged the most. Not that he was by any means, or is by any means ready. He's not. But he's got good size, like 6'5". He's got a good arm. He's matured. He's still got a ways to go, but at this point, he's got a leg up.
But I understand, though, in terms of the numbers, that they were pretty disappointing.
Yeah, the spring game, it really was much more of a passing exhibition than it was a running one. There are definitely concerns. Neither Cardale Jones nor J.T. Barrett looked particularly good, and nor did the receivers, for that matter. So, you know, I hesitate to put a whole lot of stock in a spring game. There's so many factor that it's just not real football. I mean, it's just not. But still, you can tell whether a guy has, you know, looks good. And those guys didn't look very good, honestly.
We were talking about just momentarily Braxton Miller, his update, and recovering from his minor shoulder surgery. But 2014 could be a huge year for him because he obviously is going to be at the forefront in terms of one of the Heisman contenders and in consideration for that. Just talk some more about the value of Braxton and what he's just meant to this program. I mean, he really did have a great year.
He did. You know, the quarterback at Ohio State always gets some kind of criticism, unless they're Troy Smith winning a Heisman. And some people think that, okay, you know, they certainly thought that he made the right decision in not applying for the draft, not going to the NFL draft. And that's almost a universal opinion. He still has to work on getting the ball out quickly, on being able to process the game a little bit faster, going through his reads a little bit better. But he is absolutely, as a college quarterback, he is invaluable. He's got great running ability, obviously. That is stuff you just can't teach. He's also got an underrated arm. I mean, some people really kind of discount how strong his arm is. He can make every throw. So he's going to go through kind of a John Gruden-like quarterback clinic with the Ohio State coaches. They're probably going to bring in some other people, and they're going to really grill him on that kind of stuff. So, yeah, this is obviously a big year for him. It's a senior year, but in terms of what he means to Ohio State, he means everything, honestly.
How far has he come in terms of mentally with the game?
Oh, a lot. I mean, he came in as a freshman having no expectation of playing. And then Terrell Pryor got into all the trouble he got into and decided to leave, and the cupboard was bare. And he was thrust into that job as a freshman, as an 18-year-old, before he was ready. He would tell you that now. And it was a terrible year. Luke Fickell was the coach, had no chance to form his own staff. They were just trying to get through the year. And so to think about where he was then and where he is now, it's night and day.
We are going one-on-one with Bill Rabinowitz at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. This past fall, he released a book. It was really, really compelling. It's titled Buckeye Rebirth, Urban Meyer, An Inspired Team, and a New Era at Ohio State. Tell our listeners a little bit about this book.
Well, I'm the beat writer for Ohio State, obviously, and during the 2012 season, as it kind of reached its end, and he knew there was not going to be a bowl game or anything like that, I just kind of thought, this is a unique season. And when they did finish the season undefeated, I thought, you know, I think there's a book in this. And I knew some of the background stories, but I wanted to flesh them out, things I couldn't really do in the newspaper. And I asked Urban Meyer if he would cooperate. He said he would. I talked to him multiple times. I talked to his wife for a long time, every assistant coach, virtually every player. And I think I captured not just the 2012 season, but really what it's like to play for Urban Meyer, what it's like to coach under Urban Meyer, what it's like to really understand what the program is like at Ohio State now under Urban Meyer. So I wrote in a way that hopefully it would have resonance beyond just the 2012 season. If you want to know what it's like at Ohio State, why he's successful, then I think the book still has relevance.
Well, it is an amazing read because you just think back into 2011, just all the adversity him and his coaching staff had to overcome and just his keys to success and just how he has been able to step in so quickly and to respond. Can you quickly hit on that?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that people underrate about him, everyone talks about the spread offense, and that's the key. And I don't think that's the key. I think the key is that he is really a psychologist. He understands what buttons to push. He understands how to motivate people, both positively and negatively. He really is a CEO. All coaches now, head coaches, have to be CEOs. They have to go and manage. And he's great at that. He knows what buttons to push. He understands how to motivate people. And I think that's the thing that really people overlook when it comes to Urban Meyer.
Of course, it's titled Buckeye Rebirth, Urban Meyer, an inspired team in a new era at Ohio State. I know you're very excited about the upcoming, the 2014 season. And I know those fans are too, because what, at the spring game, you had 61,000 fans. Is that true, Bill? That's insane.
Yeah, and in fact, a couple years ago, I think his first year, it was like closer to 80 or 90, I think. Yeah, there was a thing where they had ticket prices too high, honestly. And then the day before the game, they dropped it to $5. So a lot of people some people had already made plans to not go because the prices were too high. And so it was a better crowd than they would have had, but they've had bigger.
Well, we've been talking about your Ohio State Buckeyes. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon. And again, thanks for joining us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Well, thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Much more straight ahead in just a moment. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It is time for our final segment. It's hard to believe our time has just flown on by. Here we are at the Quicken Loans Studios, and right now we are going to direct our attention to the NL Central and the Milwaukee Brewers, who have certainly been red hot and off to a great start in 2014. They had a terrific April. So we're going to zero in on the Brewers, and my boy back from Las Vegas, of course, our go-to guy at Yahoo Sports Radio is our producer, Andy Pondillo. Andy, I'm so glad you're back alive and in one piece, and I understand that you want some coin out there too.
Back in one piece and $500+ richer, so you couldn't ask for a better first trip to Vegas.
Well, you know, Del Frasco's is just across the street, Andy, so I'm expecting you to buy me lunch sometime, okay?
We will do that.
Alrighty. Well, let's get some perspective on the success of the Brewers, because it has been a big difference from even a year ago.
Yeah, let's jump right into this Brewer team, and a team that I had said was left for dead this season. We were talking about the worst teams that we could see in the MLB. I had the Brewers list in a very exclusive 4-5 team group. They come out and prove me as wrong as I could possibly be. It's absolutely stunning what they've been able to put together, and a lot of MLB experts are just scratching their head at this one. But let's kind of break it down here. You got Carlos Gomez, who came off a really good year last year, a former high-round pick, a former guy that was supposed to be a superstar in this league. He struggled with the Twins, found himself with the Brewers, wasn't able to get in the starting lineup consistently. Last year, finally breaks out. He hit for power. He runs well, and a lot of teams are very irritated by him. A guy that you want on your team, but a guy you don't want to play against, because when he hits one good, he likes to flip the bat and showboat a little bit. You got him in the lineup, Ryan Braun, back fresh off the suspension, already 6 and 7 home runs between these two guys, not to mention Aramis Ramirez, the third base veteran, one of the best third basemen that we've seen in the recent memory when it comes to run production. He's leading the team in RBI, so you have all three of these guys together hitting. The Brewer offense could arguably be the best in the National League so far, but that's just where you start. You got to look at their pitching staff. Kyle Loesch, often a steady pitcher, but now pitching like back to his Cardinal ways, where he was a number two and sometimes even looked like an ace out there for the Cardinals. So he's starting to get back to those ways. I don't know if it can be kept up. Yovani Gallardo, the ace for the Brewers, he hasn't pitched like an ace the whole time he's been there in Milwaukee, but finally starting to show why he was so highly touted when he was a young pitcher. So you got good pitching, good hitting, and not to mention K-Rod, on the back end of that bullpen, closing games out perfect this year, starting to look like K-Rod back from 2004.
Well, it's been remarkable to watch, because you think back a year ago in 2013, the Brewers had 71 wins, then rallied and finished very strong after 100 losses. So do you really believe, Andy, that the key for them this year, I mean, you were talking about the offensive production, what they've been able to do with the plate, but is their marker for success, is it really based on their pitching?
It has to be on their pitching. That division, you look at teams with some excellent starting rotations between the Cardinals, the Pirates, even the Reds. You know, some of these teams haven't quite lived up to expectations so far. It's only April. It's a long season. You never really know what you're going to get over a six-month span. And a lot of times these teams that come out like gangbusters and they're just winning games left and right, the Brewers winning all these games on the road, and it starts with the pitching. But you often wonder, when you look at a staff that's so thin like the Brewers, can they keep it up? Or if they're in the hunt, will they be willing to make a move, sell some prospects, get a veteran starting pitcher, and help that team get to the promised land? I don't know if they even thought they'd be in go-for-it mode, but I'd imagine if this team can just tread water with the starting rotation, and I felt like that's what they would have had to do to contend, but in fact, the starting rotation has been excellent, so you got to imagine it's going to come down a little bit, but if they can at least tread the water and get a veteran in there, it'll at least give them a chance, not only for a wild card, but maybe a division title. I still wouldn't have them as my pick, but it's been impressive nonetheless.
Well, they've certainly been very, very aggressive. What is your belief? What does your gut tell you? I mean, as far as how deep of a run that they can make and to continue on winning?
I see them as a team that hits the August swoon.
You know,
we see a lot of those teams where they're 4 months into the season, they're leading, they got themselves a little bit of a comfortable lead, and then the pitching just falls apart. A lot of times when you see a thin starting rotation, this is what's going to happen. You know, Yovani Gallardo, this guy I'm going to point to, because to get through the NL Central, you're going to need some aces in your staff. You're going to need shutdown guys, not only for winning streaks, but guys that can come on, stop the trend when you get on a losing streak and be like, hey, I'm your ace. I'm going to throw seven shutout. We're going to get it done today. I feel like the Cardinals have that guy. I feel like the Reds have that guy, Johnny Cueto. But I do not feel like the Brewers have that guy. And Yovani Gallardo, who was brought up as the future ace of the Milwaukee Brewers, has never shown that until possibly this year. So it really is dependent on what they're able to do at the top end of the rotation. They're going to lack depth in the rotation no matter what, but if you have two studs up there in Gallardo, Loesch, I think you can at least make it.
Hey, we're talking some MLB at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show, with our producer, Andy Pondillo, that's zeroing in on the Milwaukee Brewers. And, you know, Andy, you hit on something. You were talking about the NL Central, just how competitive of a division this is. What would you say the identity is in terms of it? What makes it so great?
The identity has been the St. Louis Cardinals at the top. They've transformed the way every team below them has to play the game, and that's through pitching, defense, chemistry, all of the above, and most importantly, a good farm system, a pipeline where you can keep bringing players in and have success immediately. The Cardinals are basically the staple organization in Major League Baseball, in my opinion, and when you play in a division with that team, it's very difficult. You know, living in Houston before the Astros were moved to the American League, I was able to watch how the Cardinals operated, and you generally get teams in baseball for a short span where they're successful for 3 to 4 years or even less than that, and it becomes go-for-it mode. Cardinals don't even ever have a go-for-it mode because it's always like that because their pipeline is so deep. So I feel like teams now, rather than going out and getting that big superstar in the NL Central, they're starting to make savvy deals. They're realizing the way to win in this division is to beat them through pitching, through defense, through playing the game right. And I feel like that's what the Reds were able to do when they were able to start to kind of cut into the Cardinals' success. They were able to construct a very good pitching staff. They were able to draft strong, bring up guys like Votto, bring up Jay Bruce. You know, obviously, anytime you have boppers in the middle of the order, that's going to help a lot. But not only there, you know, Homer Bailey in the rotation, they're able to make a trade and get Leto. So building through the top end of the pitching staff, drafting strong in the middle of the order, I feel like, yeah, it's become more of a pitching league than it ever was.
Okay, so Andy, let's zero around and talk about right now the Pittsburgh Pirates and kind of get your scouts' take on that and the April assessment, because very high expectations. We've talked about it on the show, very high expectations coming into this season. Why such a poor performance coming out of the gates?
Very, very high expectations after one playoff visit, and the pitching hasn't been all that bad. You know, you look at Gerrit Cole, their young stud, 3.18 ERA, he's pitched several innings. You can't really find anything to fault there, and you really, through their whole rotation, I don't know if it's been dominant. Wandy Rodriguez has had his struggles. Francisco Liriano hasn't pitched quite as good as he did last year. But it's not like it's awful. It's good enough to compete. And you could say it's just as good as any team out there in the NL Central going forward. But their offense, they did absolutely nothing to improve it in the offseason. And it's really showing. You know, you look at guys, you know, like Andrew McCutchen, obviously a big bopper in the middle of the order. But if you have no protection around him, it's going to be quite difficult. And right now, there is absolutely no protection for him. You got Neil Walker, who's hit for some power. Starlin Marte up at the top of the order. He hasn't produced quite what he did last year. Your young third baseman, Pedro Alvarez, he's hit for a lot of power, 6 home runs at 172 batting average. He had a lot of struggles the second half of last year. He carried them into this year, and sometimes you get worried when you see a young player striking out at this rate, not able to put the bat on the ball. He just doesn't have a two-strike approach, and if you can't protect McCutchen in the lineup, it's really going to hurt the run production for that team. So there just really is not enough run producers, and you got to spend money for run producers. I feel like the Pirates are unable to do that.
We're breaking it all down with Andy Pondillo, our producer from Yahoo Sports Radio. Andy, tell all the listeners where they can go and check out your podcast.
Podcast is at climbingtowelshill.com. It's blasting off, and we talk about Astros baseball, a little baseball around the league, and awfully tragic right now when we're talking Astros baseball.
Well, we're going to hit on that momentarily, but let me back up for a moment talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, goodness, if they keep it up, I mean, they're on pace to lose 100 games in 2014. I mean, that really blows your mind.
I don't think they'll keep up that pace, but do they have a winning season? I don't know. You know, after all those years of losing, to finally get there, to finally get into the playoffs, and the management doesn't do
enough.
They're
teasing us. Let's quickly transition here as we get ready to wrap up our segment. Talk to us about some of these Tommy John surgeries. I mean, they've certainly been prolific this year. They're calling it the year of the elbow ligament. Why is it happening so often? What's your theory, Mr. Andy Pondillo?
My theory is that youth baseball has expanded greatly in our time, probably in the last, I don't know, 10 years. You're starting to see a lot of these kids playing year-round. That hurts, but I think what hurts the most when it comes to youth baseball is a lot of these kids, they're throwing anywhere between 50 and 80 pitches per start in Little League, which is fair. But what's not fair is you're throwing curveballs, which you shouldn't be throwing under age about 16 to 17. And even then, you might be pushing it, but you can kind of get away with it a little more then. You're throwing a curveball at age 10, it's probably not good for your long-term elbow, long-term shoulder, and it's not... They're not using proper mechanics. They're not fully developed. And then once they're throwing 50 to 80 pitches, they're going out there and playing shortstop to finish the game. When you're a pitcher, you need to be icing your arm. You need to sit in the dugout when
Absolutely.
You're done. And that's the end of your day. They're asking too much. They're asking these kids to pitch, play shortstop, maybe move to the catcher, and take 4 at-bats per game. That's too much on a little league arm. I think it goes back to youth baseball a lot. There's a lot of other reasons. A lot of it's mechanical. A lot of it's just bad luck.
Well, and Andy, you know it. You know it well, because you ump youth baseball, and we've just seen so many high-profile victims this year, from the Mets closer Bobby Parnell to Oakland's Jared Parker. We got to step aside. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you, Andy. Great job, and we look forward to talking to you again real soon, okay?
Why, thank you.
All right, a very special thank you to all of our guests in our lineup joining us on this Friday night at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. Motez Bashara, of course, go out and check out a copy of his book, Beating the NBA. Tales from a Frugal Fan, Bill Rabinowitz from the Big Ten, talking about the Ohio State Buckeyes, Rob Goldman, Bill Ingram, and Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment, reminding all of you to not drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big East Sports Show. So long, everyone.